This program is brought to you by Resonance 104.4 FM. If you like what you hear and want to support our work, please make a donation at fundraiser.resonance.fm.
Good afternoon, you're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM and www.resonancefm.com on the net. And today I have two guests. I've been joined by Paul Martin and Nikki Hamlin, who are each going to describe the other, starting with Paul. Who is Nikki, Paul?
Nikki is independent filmmaker who has a very large interest in modern music right up to the present day.
And he's a writer too? Did you mention writer? He's film art phenomena?
No.
And he has a blog and...
I've left a lot out.
You've left a lot out, okay.
But you could have summed people up in two words, haven't you, these days?
I suppose that's true, yes. We have to speed on. Nikki, over to you.
Yeah, two words, Paul Martin, artist and curator.
Oh, is that it?
Well, that's three words, actually, but anyway.
Okay. Now, what brings you together? Why are you both here today in the studio at the same time?
We both went to the same school together, Christ Hospital in Sussex, but Nikki was there 8 years after me, and his experience was in ways different from mine.
Oh, so news to me. I assumed that you were both in the same class. You were both there at the same time.
We might have overlapped a year or two, and we had the same art teacher there.
Okay.
So he's responsible.
She.
Sorry.
She. Oops. Yeah. And we had some of the same bad teachers as well, yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Right.
Her kitchen was painted with pink gloss paint. The walls were painted with it. She was quite an eccentric, interesting character. Quite a good painter, too.
Right. This was her home?
Mm. She lived in the school, yeah. They were all institutionalised.
In the worst possible way. What sort of school is it, or was it? I know you've vowed not to talk about
it. We don't want
school,
to talk too much about it because we don't have happy memories. But
do you not? Why?
No. All sorts of reasons which we don't really want to go into today. But
we'll give you one.
Paul referred to bad teaching. There were some terrible teachers there, sort of war damaged people who should never have been allowed to be in education.
Which war is this?
World War II, or even World War I, actually.
I said war damaged people. Interesting.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And they somehow conveyed this damage to you.
Well, yeah, it was. I manifested itself as sort of misanthropy, really. General misanthropy and kind of...
What, even the art teacher?
Oh, no, she was interesting. She was different. Okay. I mean, art teachers are always different anyway.
Yeah.
But actually, she was replaced...
Being an art teacher yourself.
She was really... She probably wouldn't be allowed to teach now because it was... She was replaced by somebody who had a proper training, you know, had a PGCE and postgraduate certificate in education and was far less interesting as a person. Was quite an efficient teacher, whereas she was quite an inspiring and interesting character.
Right.
And there were a few people like that, but for every one of those, there was a sort of messed up, you know, anyway.
Sadist.
Pardon?
Were they sadistic?
No. Yeah, some of them are sadistic. what can one say? We weren't going to dwell too much on this.
But what kind of school? How would you define it as a school? What kind of school?
Well, actually,
it?
The interesting thing about it is it was founded in 1553 by Edward VI, the one that died young when he was 15. But it's one of the few so-called public schools which still genuinely is a public school. It still is a proper charitable institution, foundation. It didn't sell out like all these other schools like Eton and become the preserve of the rich. It still, as far as I know, it still takes a range of all sorts of people. So
it's a public school?
It's in the proper sense, yeah.
Okay. What does that mean by the proper sense?
Well, it means what the public schools really were private, are now, have become private schools. They were established to provide an education for, poor children who might not otherwise have got one. And through a process of gradually as these schools became richer and more selective, they devised ways of excluding the poor children. So, for example, at Eton, the poor children would be sent home for lunch, and then they would have to be back by 2 to commence lessons, knowing while the staff knew that they wouldn't be able to get back in time. They did all these kind of sneaky things to shed the poor children, and so they gradually became. That's why they're called public schools, though, because they were originally.
But that became a sort of misnomer.
It is a misnomer, yeah. But they're really private.
Yeah.
And Christ Hospital is a private school in the sense that it's not a state school. But it is. You don't have to pay full fees to go there. You can get there. There are other ways of getting there. And my mum, I went there because my father was a doctor, and I was sponsored by Guy's Hospital. Most of my fees were paid by Guy's Hospital, which is where my father trained. Uh-huh. So there are quite a lot of people there, like me, who were single parent families or no parent families, who for one reason or another were eligible, were sponsored, or whose fees were paid by some institution. Mm. And I think every year Guy's Hospital used to pay for 4 boys to go to this school, and that's how I got to go there.
Right.
So and that still continues now.
Hmm. Interesting. Yes, what about you, Paul? What's your story?
I got there through the Artists General Benevolent Institution. They had 2 places there.
Right.
So that's how I got there, yes.
And why would you have got such a thing?
Because both my parents are artists and...
Okay.
So...
Could you tell us who they are?
Kenneth and Mary Martin.
Right.
Yeah.
And is that a Kenneth Martin T-shirt you have?
No, it's a Sol LeWitt T-shirt.
Ah.
in case the listeners are wondering. Yes.
Kenneth Martin was sort of a bit...
Constructivist.
Constructivist, wasn't he? Very well-respected artist, but probably terribly... Not as well known as some other British artists, perhaps, but very, very minimal, cool sort of artists. I'm afraid I know less about Mary Martin, I'm afraid.
Right. So both my parents were artists. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that allowed you to get this funding through the Artist Benevolent?
It was means tested.
Right.
So my father had to fill in, perhaps every year, had to fill in what his earnings were and then pay accordingly.
Right. Okay.
It might have been it's either like £200 a year or £200 a term.
So did you both live in Sussex at the time, or
I was London and...
No, my mum lived in Hazelmere, which is a rather boring...
Surrey.
In Surrey, it's between Guildford and... it's south of Guildford, really.
So they would have chosen the school then? They would have singled this school out for some reason for you to go there? Or was it a question of what they could afford?
My godfather recommended it to my mum.
Okay.
And I think my mum wanted... me and my brother and sister out of the way because she wanted to get on with her love affair with a man who became my stepfather eventually.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. All right. We'll leave that hanging in the air, shall we? Okay. So did this art teacher change the course of your life, do you think? Do you think you sort of...
I think the art school represented freedom for me. I mean, I didn't end up doing art because of my parents. That's how I felt. It was like freedom in the school.
Uh-huh.
And I was put on the slow stream. I was labelled as being thick and put on the slow stream, so we did art twice a week.
Right.
And one interesting... And she opened the art school on Sunday afternoons, I think completely voluntary. So you go in there to work, but the thing was, you go in there to work and there would be... Jacqueline Dupre would be there playing the cello.
In person?
In person, yes.
Oh, okay.
And Jacqueline Dupre gave... the art teacher cello lessons, and the art teacher gave Jacqueline Dupre painting lessons.
Right.
So she'd come, maybe in the summer term, she'd come for a few weeks, and then you'd just see her there playing away. So that was...
So you both had the same art teacher, even though this was 8 years apart, though. So it's still the same.
Well, she retired when I was there, and she was replaced by this rather kind of mainstream qualified art teacher, you know, had a teaching qualification and everything.
Okay. Should we name this art teacher that you both had?
Nell Todd. She was called Nell Todd.
Nell Todd. Yeah. We might as well remember. Her name can be sort of remembered then.
And I was taught drawing by Benedict Rubra, who was the son of the composer Edmund Rubra.
Right.
Edmund Rubra. And he used to put three stones on a piece of paper and I'd draw them for an hour and a half. He used to come in as a sort of visiting tutor. And then Nell Todd would bring me a cup of coffee, proper strong, real coffee, which was amazing. I'd never had that before.
She
had a, there was an old, it was a nice building, the art school, and it had a corner of it. It was called the Old Man's Corner. And you could just go, you know, didn't go there for lessons. You could just go in there whenever you wanted to and during lessons and just work away and leave, go, come and go as you wanted to, you know.
But why was it called the Old Man's Corner?
Because it was like mature, because only mature students did. Okay. You'd chosen to do art, so you had to be 16 or 17, 18 to do it. So she called it the Old Man's Corner.
Okay. Yes. Where does that leave us now?
Yes.
Okay. Well, okay. Yeah, good question.
All right. So anyway, you've each brought in a sort of selection of music. Which may or may not relate to school days.
Some of it doesn't. We've got some Lamont Young.
Right.
Because we, yeah, for various reasons, we like Lamont Young. We've got some of it, the stuff that he's more well known for, but the first thing we're going to hear is a string quartet that he wrote called On Remembering a Naiad, which is quite influenced by Weber, and it uses a 12-tone system, composed in 56, five small pieces for string quartet. And I think the thing is, often when you listen to, or when you look at early work of artists, or listen to early compositions, you can hear embryonically, you can hear what's going to happen later on. And there's this idea that you look back at earlier stuff through later stuff, and it changes. And this is maybe a good example of that, because although it's influenced by Webern, you start to get these kind of closely, perhaps two notes played together simultaneously, which aren't quite the same pitch, you know, so it generates these frequencies which he was interested in subsequently. But the first two...
What's this?
56.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's... the first two pieces, they're very short. Each one is about a minute, so...
So that was, in fact, three very short tracks by Lamont Young from the 50s.
Yeah, from 1957. Actually, it reminds me of John Cage's first string quartet as well. It's got this kind of static quality, and he's interested in harmonic relationships, and in the end that's all there is in the later work. You know, those drone pieces like the Drift Studies, it's just two sine waves played against each other, which generates these kind of a kind of fluctuating tones, which you can sort of hear it in places in there where you've got two notes that are almost the same but not quite playing simultaneously, and then he eliminates everything else eventually, although it's already pretty pared down when you listen to it. There's no drama, there's no sense of momentum like there is in Beethoven or something. I think it's an absolutely beautiful piece, and it doesn't sound anything like what Lamont Young is known for, but in a way it has the basic ingredients of his subsequent music.
I would never have guessed that it was him.
No, me neither.
If I was just listening to it, I didn't know. What about you, Paul? Would you have recognised it?
I'd have thought Webern. I think I'd probably guessed Webern.
Right. Yeah,
similar.
Yeah. So, did you have a music teacher at school?
Yeah, actually. Well, later on, if we have time, there's it was very well endowed for music, and they had two incredible organs. They had a really big one in the chapel, and then there was another building called the Great Hall, and that's where I first heard Messiaen's organ music played by Simon Jolly, who was at the school, but he went on to become director of the BBC Singers, I think it was, for years. But he was a fantastic organist, and he played this some Messiaen. I'd never heard Messiaen before, and that was a real revelation.
Right.
And there were some very good music teachers, actually. Actually, the orchestra, I think, was a bit crap, but it had a very good military band. The military band was one of the top school military bands in the country.
Really?
Yeah.
Right. All I remember of our music classes, if you were interested in music at my school, they just sort of, they gave you a recorder and you were supposed to sort of join in this kind of mass recorder outfit, and I just couldn't get into it at all. But it seems a shame. I would have liked to have done music at school, really, but I was sort of deterred from it. But strangely enough, when I was at school, I had wanted to be a vet for some unknown reason. I don't know how I latched onto that. And the music teacher, in fact, said, "Oh, no, you should go to art school." And I thought, "Oh, yeah, perhaps you're right." Mm. And in fact, that's how I got to art school, because this one person sort of nudged me in that direction, of course, changed the whole direction of my life. Do you think, do you have any direction in that way? Do people at school recognise what you should do? And
well, the art teacher thought I was good at design. So when I chose to do art, she gave me lots of design exercises. Then I went to something called Barry Summer School when I was 16, which I wasn't eligible for, but I came back with all these oil paintings, and she took me seriously from then on.
Okay.
So it's a bit
But I suppose
uphill.
having two parents who were artists, anyway, serious practising artists, would have had a profound influence on you anyway.
Yes, my mother, when I went, we had very long holidays, and I'd come home from my holidays and I'd amass copies of the Beano. I'd get 11 copies of Beano to catch up with, and then I'd sit around being bored. And my mother gave me exercises. She gave me work to do, exercises, drawing, exercises to do, so...
Was your mother a minimal artist as well? Was she in the same sort of
Yes.
Her work's absolutely beautiful, actually, and I think it's not as austere as Kenneth Martin's work, perhaps.
Yes.
But she made these wonderful reliefs. Really fantastic work. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Now, I had to choose between music and art. They said you can't do both when I was 14, so I couldn't see how I could be creative with music, because there were the way it was taught. You know, I learned the piano for 7 years, so I chose art rather than music, which I think was the right thing to do, because most of the pupils who were serious about music were just kind of the very boring. I think learning an instrument, lots of rote learning to read music and all that, which I did learn to do, but I just part of me would have liked to have learnt the organ.
Right.
But I would really like to have liked to have done that. But at the same time, I wouldn't have wanted a career as an organist, I don't think. You know, working in a church with a choir and stuff, I couldn't see myself doing that.
No, no. Okay. Well, we're going to play your track next, Paul. We're going to play one of yours.
Is that the Ballet du Soho?
If you say so. Yes. The Ballet du Soho.
It's either the Beatles or the Ballet du Soho.
Well, let's start with the Ballet du Soho. This is something I'd never heard of before.
It's a French record. It's by a couple called Lazary Bachet.
Right.
And this is, in fact, one of my parents' records. It's from 1960. Really? And Lazary Bachet made their own musical instruments out of, like, stainless steel and wire and glass.
Yeah.
And these compositions they wrote, one of them wrote for the instrument.
Yeah. So this is a French disc.
Yes.
It's a 45 RPM.
Yes.
It's a single, actually.
Hope so, yes.
Ballet du Soho. Why is it called Ballet du Soho?
I've got no idea.
No idea.
I'm hoping it's after the Soho in London.
Yeah. And okay, let's play that.
Thank you.
It's interesting to go from Ballet du Soho to a different kind of Soho, I suppose. Although that was in fact live at Leeds, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, live at Leeds.
Yeah.
There's a tangential connection, which is that their manager, Kit Lambert, went to Christ Hospital School.
Oh.
And his father, was it Constant Lambert, the composer? And, yeah, there was another Lambert after that, I think. I can't quite remember now. But anyway, yeah, the Who's manager went to Christ Hospital.
Okay.
And, well, I think it's a wonderful, Live at Leeds, wonderful album, absolutely incredible. And I used to have the LP, which only had a small selection of the tracks, and eventually they released them all, and it's extraordinary. It's so intense, and... Mm. You can't listen. I've never listened to it all through, actually, in one go, because it's too much.
So it just occurred to me, of course, you two were never at the same school at the same time.
We were at the same school, but not at the same time. Yeah.
So when did you first realise, you know, you must have encountered each other, and then it came out that you had been at the same school?
Through a mutual friend, Hilary Lane, I think.
Right, yeah. yes.
And was there a sudden shock of recognition, or did you just think?
No,
We just nodded.
We just nodded in. We'd been through there.
You were there too, yeah.
Through the mill.
Because okay. I think in the 1980s, I saw this chap in the street, and I thought, oh, he went to the same school as I did. And I saw him a couple of times, and I said to him, oh, did you go to Christ Hospital? And he said to me, oh, I might have done. You know, he was very. He was.
He couldn't remember.
No, his love of it was such, and he was in the same house as me, yeah. and he was second in each house. There was like the two prime monasteries. They had their own, study, and you could go to his study and listen to music.
What did you call them?
Study. They had a
no, but what was the word before? It sounded
monitor.
A monitor.
Right.
Sorry.
They were with the
with a big monster.
The big monitor big monitors were called Grecians, and so there was a house. It was like a house captain, and he was like deputy house captain.
Right.
And officially, we were allowed to listen to pop music for an hour on Saturday. And half an hour on a Wednesday, and a friend and I, we used to go up to the matron's flat, and we'd boil a kettle and make some coffee, and then we'd listen to his records, which were like either Oklahoma or Oliver. So that was fun. But in the studies, you could listen to whatever they were happy to let you hear.
Right.
There's only room for like two or three of you.
Right.
So you listen to all the latest Beatles LPs and stuff in there.
Yeah.
In there.
So where are we going? What's next on the agenda?
Is it your turn, Paul?
How about we could play another school favourite called This is There's a Place by the Beatles. And it was, we had a teacher at school called Fish. And whenever you went into his classroom, you'd start singing There's a Place. So that's why There's a Place.
Which Beatles. Number is it? Which
63. Track? It's track number 2.
Oh, okay. That's easy. Okay.
There's a place where I can. And there's no time when I'm alone.
that?
Oh.
That's okay.
We Moving can play swiftly
Lamont,
on.
We can play Lamont Young
Lamont
in
Young,
a minute.
Yeah.
We've got more Lamont Young coming up.
Yeah.
This is the one with the Marian Zazila cover.
Yeah, it's Drift Study 14773.
Did either of you, presumably at this point in time, would you have got out to see live bands at this in this
yeah,
period
I,
of school?
I did. I used to actually snuck off for a whole day and went to a festival once, and I saw various saw Elton John and Mountain and all these bands in Crystal Palace. But I also there were a couple of official trips which the chaplain took us on. One was to see Roy Harper, but the other one was to see Lifetime, which was the band Tony Williams. John McLaughlin, which was a fantastic, that was a really one of the best gigs I've ever been to. And it was at the Dome in Brighton, and most of the punters seemed to have come to see the support band, who were called The Greatest Show on Earth, who were absolutely rubbish.
Yeah.
And a lot of people walked out during Lifetime, but they were absolutely wonderful.
Yeah.
Really, really inventive, incredibly energetic.
Yeah.
Fusion, I suppose. It got,
right.
I think we used to call it jazz rock.
Exactly.
Because it was like jazz played on rock instruments, really. But it was great, really good. And then I bought... They only ever made two albums, both of which are wonderful, actually.
Yeah.
In fact, I should have could have bought one, but it's not connected to the theme, so never mind.
Okay.
But yeah, that was my...
Paul, did you get out?
No.
Escape?
No.
No?
I'm afraid no, we weren't taken to... I was allowed to go to one of my father's private views.
Oh.
He had to persuade the school that it was educational. So I was allowed out for the evening and the night.
You sound like a prisoner or something.
Yes, I sound... I'm sorry I'm making it sound so... so whatever.
So what was the first... You must have seen a live band at some point.
That must have been afterwards.
Yeah.
I did... Coincidentally, I did see The Who when they just made My Generation. And I saw a venue called Notre Dame Hall, which was beneath the Notre Dame Church in Leicester Square.
Mm-hmm.
And I went with this girl who liked dancing. And what happened was, when we were there was a circle of people all watching The Who. Then there was another circle of people all watching this girl dancing, because she did this like sort of hippie-type dancing. And so that was an experience.
Mm. Do you know roughly when this is? Or?
So they just made My Generation. Would that be
That's
pretty 65?
That's 1965. Sounds
like a scene out of Blow Up.
Right, yes. I think probably, I think like 12 and 6.
Well, that's quite something to have seen them at that time.
I think I was just looking up something exciting for this to take this girl to, you know.
Yeah, indeed.
I think that was what.
Yeah.
And so, and I like, I think I sort of liked them from an early time,
Right.
Yeah.
All right, well, we can play Lamont Young, but we could possibly talk over this, I suppose.
If you'd like.
Oh, I don't want to,
And Lamont can like it or lump it.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want to interfere with the purity of it.
Three sine waves, And I think they're all derived from or locked into the voltage, the 60 hertz or 50 hertz AC voltage. So they're all... It's just like these ideas of irrational numbers generated from two sine wave tones which have no harmonics. So they're pure fundamentals. Two pure fundamentals generate this kind of interference pattern in a way. And he's obsessed with the fact that they drift gradually over time.
Right. And how is he creating the sound? What is
they're sine wave generators.
Right.
So they're just generating, well, in this case it says three pure sine tones.
So it's an electronic instrument of some sort.
It's just a device which just generates a constant tone.
Right.
But I think ultimately it's dependent on the voltage, the electrical voltage. If that fluctuates, then I think the tone fluctuates as well, and that causes this drift.
Right.
And the longer it goes on, the more likely it is to drift, just statistically. Hmm. But also there's a really interesting essay he wrote called this system, two systems of 11 categories. I think you can find it on Ubu, and he talks directly about the cortex, the cerebral cortex in the brain, and how there are competing theories about how auditory signals are processed in the brain, but the long-term exposure to these frequencies and how they sort of lock into your brain waves and things like that. There's a whole, that's what the essay is about. So he's interested in not so much in the sound per se, but in what it, how it affects your consciousness, really. And if you go to the Dream House in New York, it's switched on all the time. There's these four big speakers playing these tones. And
what is the Dream House? Could you?
It's a building in New York. It's an apartment building which has four large speakers in it playing these tones. And you go into the room. It's quite loud, and you stand in there, and the windows are covered in purple. Transparent fiberglass, what's it called, you know, plastic stuff.
Perspects.
And there's some Marion Zazila,
kinetic
projections,
yeah,
aren't they?
Projections
with
whatever they call mobiles. And the thing is, if you move, you move your head ever so slightly, the whole experience changes because of the different air, different pressures in the air, of the air in the room, to do with where you position your head. And after a while, you start to hear all these overtones, these higher harmonics as well. It's a really extraordinary experience.
Is this their own building?
Yeah.
They own the building?
Well,
I think
it's funded by... sorry, my brain's not working today. You know that organisation that has the Deer Foundation,
yeah.
I think, sponsor it or fund it.
Right.
Yeah, it's an apartment, and there's a sort of an antechamber that you go into, which is first, which is fairly quiet, and then you go into the main room, which is quite a large room. It's probably about 25 square metres or something like that.
Mm.
It's open. I've only been there once. It's open on Friday afternoons and Saturdays or something like that. Worth a visit. It's really amazing. You can just lie on the floor and just not move, but then as soon as you start to move, just if you turn your head just a degree or two, you get these dramatic shifts of volume and frequency. Yeah, it's extraordinary.
Do you think this kind of music has presumably informed your film practice?
Not really, no, because no? I wasn't aware of Lamont Young until later on, really. I started making films when I was a student. And it's only in the last few years I've started listening to Lamont Young.
What do you do? Paul, are you a painter, or...?
I'm interested in film and sound.
Okay.
Really, yes. So,
right.
Yes, I'm very, yeah.
So
I'm very interested in sound.
You use sound in your...
Physicality.
Right.
Yeah. I just describe it as an interest, yes.
Right.
Yeah.
So would this have been an influence on you or not?
Yes, in a way, yeah. Just sort of reading. I suppose my earnest collection, my first sort of connection with it is reading about Terry Riley in a French magazine, and reading about Lamont Young. And is that Lamont Young that used Turtle Motors?
Mm.
And so just reading, never having heard any of his music, talking about these turtle things, and then just sort of imagining. You had to imagine, because you couldn't, the records went around,
right.
So you just had to imagine what it would sound like, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I knew about Terry Riley, actually. I'd heard Rainbow and Curved Air, I think,
right.
When I was at school,
some
actually.
Some films are like that, aren't they? You want to read about films,
yes, yeah.
That would affect your attitude, even though you hadn't seen them.
Yeah.
You're hearing about Warhol, for example.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You
know,
before
yeah.
you'd seen them, you would think, that's a great idea. Or something.
Yes, yeah. Doesn't work with headphones. If you listen to this, even if you just listen to it on a stereo, and you move around, it has the same effect as the Dream House.
Oh, right.
So you can sort of do it at home. Yeah.
I think I first heard him live at the Documenta Festival in 1972.
Mm.
I think it was at Documenta, yeah.
Well, this is quite. This is a very long track, isn't it? This Lamont Young.
Yeah, it goes on for 78 minutes. No, not that long.
But the other one you were interested in was the well-tempered piano, which I think goes on for sort of 5 hours.
Yeah, so. And that's also a result of his kind of. He got more and more interested in tunings because the tempered scale, the modern tempered equal tempered scale. The harmonic intervals aren't pure harmonic intervals, and so he was trying to work with pure harmonic intervals or Pythagorean intervals.
Right.
And yeah.
So, Cole, you're going to play. It's your choice next. What are you going to play for us next?
Yes, I chose. Most of the music at school you heard was sort of Beatles and Rolling Stones, but one or two people had very sort of hip records and. Things you wouldn't hear normally, and this I wanted to play is High Heeled Sneakers by Tommy Tucker from 1964.
See a pair of high heel sneakers?
No.
No, they must have been quite a rare sight, I would have thought. But. So, do you ever have school get togethers? Did you ever go back to school?
No.
I went back to the art teacher's memorial event. They were selling off paintings. It's like a memorial thing. So, I went back to that.
Oh.
And.
Nicky, did you know about this?
No, I didn't know about that, no.
We could have met. That would have been nice. That was, yeah.
So there's no motivation to go back and sort of see the buildings and wallow in nostalgia?
No.
Okay.
Such as a love for, yes.
So they were not the happiest days of your life, the school days?
I think it's safe to say, yep. Well, I made a resolution when I left that I would never look back on my school days with through rose-coloured spectacles. But there were, I mean, I was exposed to an interesting range of culture, and there were some interesting people doing interesting things. For example, people putting on Beckett plays, and it was culturally quite rich and interesting. It's just that as an institution, it was terrible. Right. But there were some very interesting people there doing interesting stuff, and you know, I was exposed to all sorts of different music, including Stockhausen and Messiaen, as well as the stuff that we'd been playing, you know. And, I mean, from that point of view, it was quite rich. Saw a lot of Shakespeare plays. Gosh. And I used to do makeup for school plays. And one of the people I used to make up is Roger Allam, who's now quite a famous. Well, he's a famous actor, actually. He's in the RSC and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was for things like music and drama. There was good stuff going on, you know. But as an experience overall, it was pretty bad.
I think it improved when, I mean, sometime later, I saw a bit of a TV news program about it, and when they introduced girls, when they closed, there was a girls' cross hospital in Hartford, and there was a boys' cross hospital in Horsham, and then the girls' school closed, and they came, so it became co-education, and I think it was much happier then.
Right.
It seemed much. I think that was a real.
I suppose I have
real
to
improvement.
Ask, why is it called Christ's Hospital?
Hospital then had a different meaning. It was like. So it was a charity, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Would you say, yes.
Mm. Okay. So and it happened to be a hospital that became a school?
Hospital had a different meaning.
Okay.
And it was originally in the City of London.
Ah.
And then they, in 1900, they sold the land in the city and bought this huge field in Sussex.
Right.
And for a bargain price, yes.
Messiaen.
Yeah, Nicky. This is from L'Ascension. And I first heard Messiaen played on this organ at the school by Simon Jolly, as I said before.
Well, we are actually rapidly running out of time, I'm afraid. You have been listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM with, I can't really call you school friends, can I?
No.
You were never actually there at the same time. But
we shared a vibe.
You shared, okay.
The art school, both like the art school.
Yeah,
the art
school. Is there a name for this genre, this, you know, people that went to the same school?
We're old blues. Never. We're known as old blues.
Old blues.
Yep.
Okay, fair enough. I'm going to quickly get in a plug for myself. Heated Gloves will be showing in Berlin at La Plaque Tournante, not this Saturday, but the Saturday after, which I can't remember what it is. I think that's either July the 1st or something. At Frederick Aquaviva's club, La Plaque Tournante in Berlin, 8 o'clock Saturday night. Heated Gloves, that's the film of Maurice Seddon. And we are now going to...
Can I plug something very quickly?
Yes.
A series of screenings organised by Simon Payne, Andrew Valance, Amy Dixon and Jamie Jenkinson called Pairs in Lower Clapton, Upper Clapton Road 34, I think it is. There's information on Facebook.
Yes.
Or if you Google Pairs, it should come up.
These are film
The next
screenings.
Three Mondays in a row in the evening, film screenings, film and video.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting, because we're pairs. Well, you've been pairs today as well, haven't you? This must be something in the air. All right, so we're going to end now with Pink Fairies. Why?
Because after I left school, I went hop picking. I had a friend that lived in Sussex, and we went hop picking on the hop farm, and we also went to some pop festivals. And one would often hear the Pink Fairies playing Free, or sometimes on the stage.
Yeah,
they were a sort of feature of that period, really, and festivals. And so it's just a sort of slightly post-school moment.
I might be completely wrong. They're not the ones that had Martin Stone playing for them, were they?
No, no.
No, what was he with?
Martin Stone, Red Hot Chili Peppers? Chili Willy and the Red Hot Peppers.
Ah.
Yeah, I think that's okay. Right. Is that right?
Possibly. Well,
the Pink Fairies were they were always stoned. They had this wonderful guitarist, Canadian guitarist, Paul Rudolph, who was subsequently deported. They had two drummers, and they used to play in stereo. It seemed very exotic at the time. And you'd go to these festivals, and people were always saying, "Don't take the acid, man," you know, and there'd be these messages coming over the PA.
Okay.
So anyway, this is their single.
Thank you very much to Paul Martin and Nicky Hamlin for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us, and see you soon.
And you, of course, you were on the show before playing Chicken Tracks, weren't you?
Yes.
Some time ago.
And Lee, you aren't here, and I did a programme about trains as well. So I'm
indeed
getting...
You're quite a veteran now.
And my choir, the choir I belong to called Muzak, we did a gig here as well. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm going to tell you, baby, don't try.
This program has been brought to you by Resonance 104.4 FM. If you liked what you heard and want to support our work, please make a donation at fundraiser.resonance.fm.